This episode of WDW Today is brought to you by our good friends at Off to Neverland Travel. And speaking of good friends, Kyle Froman is here. Tell me a little bit about your role at Off to Neverland and, you know, why you decided to work for them and what makes this organization different.
So with Off to Neverland Travel, I have the joy of working with all of our magic makers. I know you've talked about our magic makers before, and we call them that specifically because they do just that. They make magic happen for families in unbelievable ways. I came to know Off to Neverland Travel back in its early days. Chet McDaniel, our owner, was actually selling a cruise on eBay. I came and told my wife, hey, I bought a cruise package off of eBay, and somehow my wife didn't kill me. And somehow the cruise actually existed.
Yeah, I'm about to say, my first question would be like, that doesn't seem real. Right. I don't know you could do that.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. So we set sail, but through that it spawned a relationship and a friendship with Chet, who's the owner of Off to Neverland. And the touches and magic that he put into our vacation, even as a random eBay stranger, sold us on what he was doing. So our friendship blossomed. I got involved with what he was doing through the travel agency and have been working with Off to Neverland ever since, helping make dreams come true. It was really birthed by Chet out of a passion to share that Disney magic with other people. You know, he experienced Disney in ways that he'd never found in other destinations, which made him a firm believer of the Disney way. And we're just a part of extending that to other families.
Well, that's great. You can find out more at gotoneverland.com. And now, on with the show.
Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today, coming to you from somewhere off property at the Laugh-O-Gram Studios, featuring Len Testa and the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter. Now here they are, Terry Weaver, the nature boy Will Haynes, and your host, Logan Seculo.
It's Wednesday, February 16th, 2016, and this is episode 1499. Ooh. That means next week is 1500. We got some big announcements coming up next week. We hope you guys make sure you tune in, share it with your friends. It's going to be a doozy. It's going to be good. Make sure you turn turn the knob. Get the channel. Lock it in. WDW Today.
This isn't a radio show. It's a podcast show.
You know what I mean? You know, go to your app. Make sure it's set to update every 15 minutes like mine is and kills your battery. Make sure you do that because we're going to have some great news next week. And we're joined today with, hey, I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Terry Weaver.
I'm Will Haynes.
And joining us today, Mr. Kyle Froman. He may have heard in the ad read, unless you skipped it, which I encourage you, go back and listen to it, jerks. No, I'm kidding. Kyle, welcome.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, Kyle needs it. And we brought Kyle in today because, one, Kyle's a local here. He lives in the Nashville area as well, so we get to see Kyle from time to time. But also because we're talking a little bit differently today. Now, Kyle and I have had the unique experience of both spending a little bit of time with Mr. Dick Van Dyke. What was your experience like, Kyle?
Oh, man, it was awesome. We were at Earmarked Conference, sure, with Disney, is a conference they put on for agency owners and staff. And Dick Van Dyke came in as a surprise guest and led us in singing Let's Go Fly a Kite and spent some time sharing with us. But afterwards, we were sitting outside and we saw a car sitting on the curb that looked like it was somebody's car. And there was a man standing next to it just waiting. So I went over and said, hey, you know, is this Dick's car? He's like, well, yeah, it is actually. And I'm like, well, can we meet him? He said, well, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah, you know, can we meet him? And we got to talk to this guy for a few minutes. And he said, I'll tell you what, hang out right here. When Dick comes walking out, just, you know, say, hey, Mr. Van Dyke. So we hung out on the curb for a good 45 minutes, an hour. The driver walked by and nodded, meaning he was on his way. Sure enough, Mr. Van Dyke came walking by, and we shouted out, hey, Mr. Van Dyke, and he stopped, and we got to hang out and talk with him a little bit. Really, really cool experience.
Yeah.
Was the rendition of Let's Go Fly a Kite the best experience of your life?
Oh, unbelievable. There may or may not have been a small tear in the corner of
just
my
one.
Eye.
I would have been
just
weeping.
One.
I saw you post the footage of it, and I cried from Nashville when you were in Anaheim, like, why am I not there?
It was pretty
epic. Why don't
epic.
I work for Off to Neverland?
Pretty epic.
Yeah, and look, we've teased a little bit. The reason I haven't put up our interview with Dick Van Dyke yet, there's a specific reason. It's because we were out there for a specific reason that's not yet announced. So we'll get to that, and I'll tell our whole story about how that happened. Great people, great. I mean, I can't really speak higher than dealing with Mr. Van Dyke. But that's not the topic today. The topic is people that are traveling for the first time to Walt Disney World. And for people that are listening, like most of you that travel all the time, don't be discouraged. I think you're going to like this. And then after this topic, we have a special segment with Tom Bancroft and a special guest who we're going to tease. Special guest. We're going to talk about the Animation Academy, the Magic Animation attraction that closed down, because he was a part of it. If you remember, he showed up on a screen and kind of instructed everyone, and he came in and talked to us. You're going to love that. If you're a Parks fan, stay tuned, and you're going to like that.
And if you're not a Parks fan, why are you listening? Once again.
Well, they may not be listening because it may be their first trip. They don't know if they're a fan yet. So Terry actually presented us with this option.
Yeah, so I know the one thing I hear from people like in real life all the time is, how do I plan my first trip to Walt Disney World? Because like you, we all know Disney World's huge. All four of us in this room have been and probably still haven't come close to doing everything there is to do.
Yeah, and a lot of people are traveling. It may not be their first time going to Walt Disney World, but like until, you know, I'm 30, so until 10 years ago or so, it was the first time I booked a trip to Walt Disney World because I'd go with my family. So people that are leading up to maybe even planning their first family vacation or outing.
You know, we deal with it all the time, families that want to go to Walt Disney World for the first time. And I think one of the things that families feel when they're going is they don't understand the magnitude or size of it. You know, you think you're going to get to Magic Kingdom and you're going to walk in the gate and Mickey's going to be standing there waving his hand at you and you're going to walk right down the middle of Main Street,
USA. Just like the commercial.
Just like the commercial. It's going to be empty and the park's going to be to yourself. And you get in there and you realize that is not the case.
Right.
You walk through the gate and your kid smells the popcorn and starts screaming he wants popcorn. You don't want to wait in line, so you buy him a Mickey bar, and he drops the Mickey bar in the middle of the ground and cries some more. And
this sounds like going to the park with Will is what this sounds like.
Yeah, totally.
I never dropped the Mickey bar.
So you're an hour into your stay, and you haven't done a thing yet. So giving people an idea of what they're up against when they get there, painting realistic expectations of just how magical it is, but just how to navigate it is huge.
Right.
You can't do it all in one stay. You can't see everything. Even in a week there, I can't see it all with my kids. So having a plan, you know, identifying what you want to do when you get there and having a list of those things, and then everything else that happens just becomes gravy. But helping people plan for, prepare to navigate the grandeur and size of the most magical place on earth has been huge. You know, giving them a picture of what they're up against when they step in.
How have you seen things change for you? Because I know you have kids. How old are your kids?
7 and 4.
So you've kind of experienced now, since you've been with Off to Neverland and since this has been part of your business, kind of growing up with them as babies and seeing them kind of now grow to being 7 and 4, very active and being a part of it. How is that transition as a dad, and how do you now take that topic and help people? Because like, I have a 3-year-old son, and I can tell you, I took him when he was 1, which was probably, some people would say, too early, but I did it because I was there. It was free for him to go, and I was an annual pass holder. Why not? We got my picture with Mickey. But you know, now I'm taking him in a few days, for the first time since he was 2. So really, since he's now 3 and a half, very active. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, we've gotten to experience it at every age between our boys. So 1 through 7, every year we've been at a park with one of the kids. And at every age, it's been different. You know, you hear a lot of families say, well, we're going to wait till our child is 5 or 6 to go so they remember it. But there's such magic that happens when a child is 1 or 2 and everything is real.
Absolutely.
To them. Obviously, you have to adjust and know that you can't do everything. You know, Disney does have great things in place like the rider swap, parent swap, where parents can both ride and wait with the child. But you see it a different way with the younger kids. We just got back from Disneyland last week with both boys, and it was completely different because now our 7-year-old is tall enough to ride everything.
Right.
So he did California Screaming 6 times. You know, our 4-year-old can now ride Thunder Mountain and Space Mountain and rides that he never got to experience. So there's different things that are cool at every age.
There's one of a comedian that we all like, Nate Bargatze, who's from Nashville. He is in New York. He has a whole bit. Maybe we can find the bit. Maybe we can reach out to him. He'd be a funny person to reach out to and talk to. He has a whole bit about that, about people, him taking his like 2-year-old daughter to Walt Disney World and everyone complaining about their kid's never going to remember it. It's like, well, yeah, so what? I'm going to put her in a box and say no fun for multiple years, you know, something
right.
like that. And that is kind of that. You start thinking about it because it's just as much for you as it is for them.
Yeah, as a dad, the memories that I have of that, man, they'll go with me forever.
Oh,
pretty incredible.
My background on my computer is Riker with Mickey when he was, you know, probably almost 2, you know, maybe a year and a half. And it was at Mickey's house, which isn't even there.
And I've said, you know,
in California, so.
One of my first experiences was at Disneyland with Logan when We were two and a half.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
we have vague. I have flashes. I have flashes in my mind of the Tiki Room. I don't know why. I flash in mind of the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse. That's about it. That's about all I have.
More fear in the Swiss
you have
Family
the,
Robinson.
You have the haunted mansion. You have the haunted mansion.
I was a fraidy child.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
I personally think if you're planning your first experience at Walt Disney World, planning your first trip, like you said, people may have traveled.
Yeah.
Or you, I believe you said it, Logan.
Yeah, gone with friends and family, done whatever, yeah.
Exactly. But if you're planning it yourself, I think really it comes down to three things, and that's comfort, experience, and expectations. Comfort, don't overplan it. Make sure that you're going to stay comfortable and not wear yourself out. You know, if it gets to the point where you are completely drained, not enjoying it, then you're not necessarily going to remember that trip. The way that you want to remember it. Experience, I think you want to make sure that what you're doing, you're going to plan it out. You want to see what parks, what they're offering, what's going on, so that you are going to have that Disney experience. And expectations, Kyle said that earlier, you know, just don't think that it's going to be perfect in the sense that you're not going to drop a Mickey bar. There's not going to be crying. There's not going to be a meltdown.
Someone's going to melt down. Yeah.
And there's so much magic that happens in the imperfection that makes it perfect. I won't forget 2 years ago, our younger son had an ear infection and got sick. And we went to one of the first aids in, I think it was Hollywood Studios.
Sure.
And we're in the first aid and my boy decides to puke all over himself and my wife. And we're like, well, great.
That's fun.
Day ruined. Yeah. You know, that's horrible. The nurse walked in and saw what happened, and she said, I'll be right back. And she came back in a few minutes later with a voucher for new outfits for my son and my wife and gave it to him and said, now go enjoy the day. Completely transformed everything. We wouldn't have asked to be in the clinic puking, but it illuminated Disney magic, and now it's one of our favorite trip happenings that's ever happened when we were there because of that. So, like you said, in the imperfection, knowing it's not going to be perfect, there's a lot of memories that are made in that and a lot of great times. How old was
your kid at that time?
He was, I believe, two and a half.
See, that's going to be like one of those wedding day stories. Like that one time you puked all over mom and got a free outfit out of it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
Dad's going budget. You know, now we can buy another ice cream bar to replace the one you dropped.
So my version of that story is I was in line when I was a child for Kongfrontation, the King Kong attraction that doesn't exist anymore at Universal Studios, as a kid. And that point at Universal, well, this is a sidetrack, but I just thought it ties in because I end up throwing up. So spoiler alert.
I give Logan a hard time about this on the regular.
And I love Kongfrontation. It ended up being my favorite attraction. But what happened was we were in line. We got called. As soon as we got in there, like, hey, you guys want to try different foods and stuff? And it's like, we're doing a survey and all of these things. We're doing a focus group. So separated all of us. They're going to give us $5 each. I was like, all right, $5. Awesome. My dad and my mom were like, $5. Great. That's like 20 bucks for all of us. We'll pay for lunch. Awesome. So we go in. They make me try some sort of Lucky Charm, some sort of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and then the final was cheddar cheese bugles. And for some reason, that was the kicker for me. And some reason, didn't sit too well with the cheddar cheese bugles. Plus, got in line for King Kong. My stomach just kept going. And it's right before we got on the car. I mean, right before, there's a trash can right there. And I just right into it. So that was not a story people are going to remember. Because they said, we all got $5 out of me throwing up. Not worth it. not worth it. What I remember are those cheddar cheese bugles. But those are really, but you are right about that. That there's magic in the mistakes. And the Disney Cruise Line, my son, we went on a Disney cruise when he was one, which was insane, which was great. Because it was, by the way, if you have a toddler, Disney cruise, awesome. A week without car seats, the best thing in the world.
Amen.
But he wouldn't get on the elevator. It was like one of the open-doored elevators. He freaked out. Just was like, no, he wasn't feeling it. And we waited. And eventually Donald came because he was going to like the party. And they're not supposed to let people ride in the elevators with the characters, much people. And they let him go and one of us go with him. And he now is one. But we had these awesome pictures of just Riker holding Donald Duck's hand in an elevator. And it's just crazy. You know, they do go above and beyond, especially if they know something is happening. So not to deter you first-timers, because really that is... the thing is that if something goes wrong, there's ways to fix it, I'd say. And you guys make sure that everything's perfect, right? Often everyone makes sure no one throws up. No one gets sick.
That's exactly right. We've got this little extra pixie dust that we put out there where everyone's healthy, all the lines part as you walk up.
Do you have a weekly conference call trying to figure out like if you need to tweak the batch of pixie dust just to make sure?
How do you start the process, Kyle, of like, planning, like, where should we start? How soon in advance? Like, for the a lot of our listeners, that's like they know the answer to that. But how soon really should you start planning to your trip?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can ever start planning too soon. You know, as soon as bookings for 2017 open up, we'll have families that are ready to start booking for 2017. You know, you want to be 180 days out so you can get your dining reservations. Yeah. You want to be far enough out to get FastPass Plus.
So how far can you book out? Knowing that, can you, if it's 2017, did that open up typically?
It typically opens up late summer.
Okay.
They'll typically open up for the next year. And we've got families, like I said, that just are ready to go at that point. Up. But you can't be too soon. But the deal is that don't feel like you can't plan if you're only 3 weeks out, too. Don't feel like, well, we're going and you guys are just a complete buzzkill. We're going to have a horrible trip now. You can plan a magical experience a few weeks out. It all comes from expectations, you know, knowing what you're getting into. And but you can't start too soon.
Absolutely. Well, great. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate you coming in. Go to Neverland.com. It's obviously the website. Kyle's going to pop in from now and then, just like they did back in the old show. We've got Kyle, and I'm excited because Kyle has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to booking your trips at Walt Disney World. The next segment, like I mentioned, it's a special segment. We're going old school, going to an extinct attraction, and we're going to go break that down and really talk about the magic of what was animation in the parks and how that has sadly kind of gone a different direction. So we'll be right back with that with Tom Bancroft. And me and Terry talk to him. So you can say bye-bye to Will for right now.
We'll be back later.
Will produced this segment, so Will was silent. So. All right, thanks, Will. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, guys.
Tom Bancroft is joining us right now. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, we're sorry. We're just going to start right off like that. So,
I'm happy to be here. How are you doing,
Logan?
We want
to talk to you. Oh, I'm doing well.
I might start calling you my guest because I do a podcast too, so well, I get confused.
Well, feel free to we'll do a crossover episode. It'll be nice.
This will be that one. Yeah. Okay.
You know, a lot of people may know you, a lot of Disney Parks fans, as being part of an attraction. You're one of the few and the proud that for many years you'd go to Walt Disney World and there you'd appear on the screen. Where were you within Disney World? People
well,
don't
and
know.
I suggest it to everybody because it makes you stay young forever. Where was I when?
Yeah, you were. It was in the Magic of Disney Animation. Yeah. Closed.
What used to be the Disney MGM Studios when I worked there, then became Hollywood Studios. There was the attraction, the Magic of Disney Animation, and then this was called the show that I was in. It was called Drawn to Animation.
Essentially, it was a live actor or cast member who would interact on two screens. One was with Mushu, the dragon. And what is your connection with Mushu?
So because I was a supervising animator of Mushu, I designed him and led the team of animators. They had me come on and be one of three different artists that get kind of, interviewed by Mushu. But we just talk to Mushu, and the animated Mushu. And then I guess we kind of interact a little bit with the live performer.
What was that like? Do you remember recording that? What that process was like to talking to nobody?
Oh yeah, it was odd. You know, I mean, as animators, we tend to be behind the scenes quite a bit. You know, and I was there during the pencil and paper days. We would literally just be sitting all day long, drawing in a little office somewhere. You know, pencil and paper all day long for the whole week. So it was really odd to have a camera crew come in. And then go, okay, now you got to look here and you got, okay, now look over here. We had very specific spots that I had to look at. So this is Mushu. And when you look here, you're looking at the actor. And I don't know how they even figured that out because they, you know, the distance of where the actual monitor was way up high when the thing was all done. So they just knew I needed to look down, I guess, when I looked at the actor. And I guess I looked to, you know, my right or whatever and a little higher when it was Mushu. Because he was going to be on the big screen in the middle. So, yeah, it was just a really surreal kind of a thing. The crazy thing that made it even weirder and more surreal when it actually came out, I realized this. I actually animated on it, too. It was one of the last projects I did before I left the studio. I left in 2000 to go work for Big Idea Productions in Chicago. And so I worked on this thing, and I animated a lot of the key scenes of Mushu. And then shot this thing right before I left, like maybe a week before I left Disney. So it was literally the last thing I did before, you know, to kind of semi shut the door on my Disney career was shoot the live action for that.
Were they
thing.
Aware you were leaving at that point?
Yeah, they did.
Okay, they
did,
so they were still fine though.
That was a pretty good mic drop though. Like if you're going to leave, you're like, well, I'm going to make myself permanently enshrined.
Exactly. Permanently
for 15 years.
It wasn't, you know, it's funny because during that time I was more concentrating on the animation and getting my deadlines done of all the Mushu scenes I had to get done. And I hadn't drawn Mushu for a little while. So it's kind of like, I'd come back to him because I'd done a little bit of Tarzan and this short called John Henry in between finishing the Mulan film and then coming back and doing this drawn animation, Mushu animation. So I was just kind of concentrating on getting that done. I had another assistant that was working on it and doing all that. And so the live action film shoot wasn't anything to me. It was just sort of like, okay, just tell me where to be and I'll say my lines. And maybe you can tell that too.
Oh, yeah. What was it like for you to be an animator? You had worked, you're from California, you worked in different studios. Did you work at the California studio as well, or was Florida your first?
Yes and no. Yeah. Florida was my career for sure. And I opened the studio there in 1989. But I had been an intern. I grew up in California. Yeah. I went to Cal Arts and then was an intern in California. So that was right as they were in the middle to wrapping up Little Mermaid. Yeah. So about 1988.
So you saw that version of the studio.
Yeah.
What was the Florida version? What was it like being there knowing that in some ways you were part of a theme park attraction? Did it interact at all with what you were doing, or was it you'd go to your special area of your office?
It interacted with what I was doing, because we literally had a glass wall where people would walk by all day long and watch us animating. And I was never had to be one of the people that was up against the wall. We usually reserve that for like in-betweeners and new people. And so we would put them.
You put them up in the front.
Right,
you don't want the recognition.
The wall.
You don't.
Oh my gosh! I mean, like, because literally, people would knock on the window and bang on them and try and talk to them, and and they would say we can't hear them, but we could. I mean, it was muffled, but we could hear them if they were yelling. You know.
I specifically remember going to that attraction as probably like a 14-year-old, 15-year-old. I was on a drama team tour, and I just remember just blowing my mind that here I am, you know, I grown up like watching all of these Disney movies, and here I am watching kind of the magic happen. And just, I think that was one of the moments in life that just kind of like, okay, anything is possible. Literally, I can do whatever I want. Here are these adults showing up every day to work in a theme park.
Yeah.
Drawing all day. So.
And having rubber band fights right in front of us and things like that. Because that's what we would do. Because eventually you kind of just sort of forgot. You never looked at that wall. You know, that one wall was all glass. You just wouldn't look at it. You'd look everywhere else. And it was up a little higher, so that helped. But, you know, we were at, like, eye level to people's knees, basically, I guess.
Do you remember any of the celebrities that would walk past?
Oh,
the
man, that first year or two, I don't know why, but we were, like, the hot ticket. Mm-hmm. And so, and all the celebrities, of course, wouldn't just go through the tour. They would come down to, you know, because they're VIPs. So they would come down, and they'd have, like, the little plaid jacketed PR person or HR person, whatever they are.
Tour guides
that would bring them down, and they would have their family usually or friends, a little entourage. But we had, well, literally every single Star Trek person. I know we had every actor from Star Trek. I remember that. Like within the first year or two of us opening, we had Michael Jackson. We had Princess Di. Talked to Michael Jackson. I remember joking. He didn't know I was joking, but
no,
I was like,
oh no.
So you ever think of doing a voice for an animated film? He's like, Oh my gosh, I would love that so much. And I was like, I'm like, seriously, in my head, that'll never happen. Yeah. But he was an awesome guy.
Yeah, he was supposed to be Jar Jar Binks. That's one of the stories that came out recently.
What?
That he was supposed, that George Lucas had talked to him about being Jar Jar. And at the end of the day, Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks, had like an interaction with him that was very uncomfortable, I guess, later on, being like, yeah, this guy's going to be Jar Jar, and tell him Michael Jackson, like, okay, fine. You know, was actually upset about that. Before we bring on our special guest, one last thing. What are your thoughts now? You know, that pavilion, the animation studio closed down. The pavilion that celebrated animation just recently became a Star Wars pavilion, which is awesome. It's Star Wars, great. I know you're obviously a big proponent of 2D animation still, but even exposing Disney animation or animation in general, even though they didn't even turn it to computer animation, they didn't turn it into anything. They just removed the whole idea of kind of animation from the facility. What are your thoughts and feelings on that and how that kind of plays into the legacy of what that whole place was built on?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think it's a mistake.
Yeah.
I'm an animation advocate, and not just 2D, but 3D also. I just love animation, and I do think it's the heart of Disney. I think it was what they started with. Remember, it all started with a mouse, as Walt says. And but it's something that should live on, and fortunately they still make the films, of course. But I mean, it was a great venue for people to kind of. I mean, I can't tell you how many people through the years. One, because I'm sort of became the face of that studio to some degree because of that drawn animation attraction.
Right.
People would recognize me or something like that. And because of that, I got a lot of, all through the years, a lot of attention and people saying, you know, email me or whatever, saying, because of that tour, I was one of the people that would sit there all day long and watch. Because we didn't, they didn't kick them out. They would let them stay all day if they wanted to.
Right.
And we had little kids that would stay all day long and just watch and just be mesmerized, wow. You know. And I know I would have done the same if I was a kid. So having that element gone from any of Walt Disney World and Disneyland, because it, that same drawn animation was also at, I don't know if you know this, at California Adventure briefly, and it was in the France Euro Disney. Yeah. And I don't know if that's, I think it's still in.
Let's check, yeah, if it's still at Disneyland.
There's
Paris.
Still a.
I speak French there.
Oh, do you really? They dubbed you?
Yeah, it's not my voice.
You can still go and do it.
I hope it's a voice that's totally not like your voice. It's like, you know, very.
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen it.
I told Bancroft.
Oh, that would be great if I sounded suave. My kids think I sound like a girl on the, in the.
I personally think, you know, since we are a podcaster, we talk about what might be. I think they're going to bring it back. It's still very much present in California Adventure. You know, you can go in and see the, you know, all of the art from it. And there's a huge room, which is one of my actually favorite things in California. So I think it's something that'll be back.
All right. Well, we were just talking to Tom Bancroft and we did say we were going to bring on a special guest. And that's Mark Mosley, who's on the broadcast. And you may not know the name Mark Mosley, but I'm sure if you've been to Walt Disney World, you've been to any of these attractions, you've heard his voice. And Mark, why will they have heard your voice?
Because let me tell you something. I'm the voice of... Oh, no, wait. This is the wrong impression.
What is it about you that brings you into this conversation as we talk about this attraction?
Well, here's the thing. I do a great Eddie Murphy impression. And I was discovered by Disney when I was living in Florida many years ago. Somebody heard me on the radio down there.
Well, that's awesome, Mark. And, you know, we talked about this attraction that featured really you speaking with a few different animators, but Tom Bancroft specifically. Do you remember being called in for that attraction? And were at this point, were you doing Mushu or whether it was Donkey or any of the other Eddie Murphy characters at this point? Or was this one of your first times?
It was Mushu first. And I don't know if Tom remembers how this went down.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, remember the first day that I showed up to do like some pickups that you guys needed to do a rough
oh, yeah.
of the film?
Yeah, you know, I think you're thinking of my brother. My twin brother, Tony, co-directed Mulan.
You weren't there that day.
No, okay. I wasn't. I don't think I was there.
Well, I walked in and, you know, everybody's there and I'm not African American. I'm a white guy. So they all kind of stared at me for a few minutes until I did the voice. And then there was this big collective sigh of relief because I think they thought they'd flown the wrong guy in.
Yeah, because the story I remember hearing was that, and I'd forgotten you'd done a few pickup lines for the actual film. That are in the film, aren't they?
Right. There's a couple of quick lines in the film. There's one, this guy's got him scared to death. That's in the song, I'll Make a Man Out of You.
That's right. Yeah.
And then there was another line where I said, down, Bessie, to the horse.
Well, that's cool.
And they decided to pay you instead of calling in Eddie Murphy, because I guess Eddie Murphy in somewhat was notorious. And a lot of actors don't necessarily come in and do not just the looping, but they won't even do merchandising.
At that point, we couldn't get him back. It was really hard to get him to come in the two or three times throughout the production of the film. Every time was like pulling strings and, you know, it would get delayed and put off the last second. I literally flew out to California to be at a recording session with Eddie Murphy because they were going to record him out there and he didn't show up.
Just didn't show up.
And I just put it a week out in California at the studio there and then flew back.
That's unfortunate. Now, Mark, do you remember being approached for this attraction, for doing this conversation, which was essentially people, I mean, it was open until just a few months ago, where people would sit in the audience, kind of hear about animation from really you as the host, along with these other real-life animators that would come in and talk. Do you remember that experience, recording that, and how they did that with saying, all right, you're going to be talking to Tom Bancroft. You're talking to these people you may not have ever met or may not even know, and here's how it's going to flow?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. This was probably a couple of years, into doing stuff for Eddie Murphy. So, I'd done all the scratch sessions for the movie, and then I'd done some merchandising, and then I came out to California and did a game. And then, I mean, I don't remember where in the series of events it was, but I was used to doing it. And so this was, I remember what a real pleasure it was because I remember after the session, this is what I remember about it. I remember after the session, because when you record there at the park, you're already inside the park. So when you walk out, you're walking out into the park. And I was like, I'm going to spend the rest of the day in the park. This is great.
Yeah, no one's kicking me out at this point.
I think you took the wrong exit, but it worked out.
Yeah, I did. I did.
I did that all the time. I worked at Nickelodeon. It was all the time. I was like, well, it's lunch break. Let's go do Men in Black.
You know? We used to do park walks every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So for this, did you ever experience the attraction, Mark? Were you ever able to go see it and see, you know, because in some ways, a lot of what you all do, whether it's what Tom does or what you do, sometimes on television, sometimes it's not. In front of this live audience, you don't get that immediate reaction. Were you able to see the attraction?
Many, many times. I saw it both in Florida, and then I moved out to California in 2002 and came to Los Angeles, and I saw it here many times before it closed here. What I never did see was the Mulan parade that I had done a voiceover for in Florida, because by the time that one came around, I had already moved to California.
That's interesting. And it was a special time. And Mark asked this to Tom too. You know, I know you come from the voiceover point of view, but also just in general, you know, Florida has essentially removed all a history or even not history, but even just any sort of actual animation facility. And now even any representation of animation, the art of animation, essentially. Do you feel like that's important for an audience still to be exposed to how things are actually made and how these films are created to inspire not necessarily even just the next generation, but just people to see what this process is that's not just clicking a few buttons and all of a sudden there's a movie?
Well, I can't imagine that there isn't a huge interest in it, with each generation.
Sure.
I mean, people are fascinated by technology. They're fascinated by animation, the process. Absolutely. I thought it was a wonderful attraction for all those years. I was sad to see it go. And I would love if they did something like it. I mean, never mind if any of us are involved in it. But I think it's important to show people the process. And I think people are particularly fascinated. I mean, obviously, everyone that walked into that attraction assumed that Eddie Murphy had done the voiceover for that attraction. And I think it's important because I think people are fascinated by that aspect of it as well. Oh, here's a big A-list celebrity, and this is how he did it.
This is just a personal question. You said a lot of people just assume Eddie Murphy recorded that. How does that make you feel, knowing that obviously your gig was created because of that, but knowing that maybe the recognition isn't as, you know, viable even there? You don't get it as much.
I'm going to add to that. Yeah. How does Eddie Murphy feel about you?
Yeah, what is your interactions like with Eddie Murphy?
Have you met him?
I've never met the guy, and I always tell people, if I'm there, it means he doesn't have to be.
Right, yeah.
But
he turned it down.
He's always paid me huge compliments through third parties. I was at a place here in L.A., a very famous place where you meet a lot of people. I met Patrick Warburton at this particular studio.
Who was just on Tom's podcast?
It's called LA Studios in Hollywood. And I was there one day, and the engineer and I had gotten to know each other, over the many sessions that I'd done there for all the different various projects and stuff. And he told me, he goes, Eddie Murphy was here yesterday, and he was talking about you. This was several years ago. This was, this was right after the original Shrek film had come out.
Oh, okay.
And I had done a Walmart spot, and in the spot, Mike Myers had actually done the voiceover for Shrek, but they couldn't get Eddie to do Donkey for the Walmart spot, so I did it. And then he said that he was in bed with his wife, and the TV was on, and the Walmart spot came on, and his wife turned to him and she said, "Is that you or the other guy?"
Oh, she didn't know. Nice.
And Eddie said, "I can't say specifically, I don't remember."
Well, that's impressive enough.
And I thought that's a great compliment.
That's huge.
Well done.
Well, that attraction, like we said, just recently went away. It became Star Wars Launch Bay just due to the fact that Star Wars has taken over everything. Which, you know, there's positives and negatives to that. I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
We love Star Wars.
I know. I can't say anything bad about Star Wars. But we did want to pay proper homage to everything that happened there, the animation world that existed at Disney MGM Studios, Disney's Hollywood Studios, and hopefully we all kind of hope it comes back. Now, These are just a few lines. We just wanted to get you guys back in the spirit. It's like, this will only take 30 seconds, and hey, I'm going to live out my dream of being one of the hosts. So I'll be very chipper. I'll be your happy cast member today. Welcome to Walt Disney. Welcome to Disney's Hollywood Studios. How everyone doing today? All right. So in this, now picture this in your mind. There's, obviously, you've been there before. If you haven't, there was a host who kind of was in the middle on a stage on an animation desk. One screen had Mushu, and then Tom was revealed. So I'm going to just take it from the host. So the host says, and once we decided Mulan's guardian was going to be a dragon,
the next step was finding out what kind of dragon you might be.
Hey, I know that voice. That guy owes me money.
No, he doesn't. He's your supervising animator. Hi, Tom.
My super what?
Hey, Mushu. Hey, how have you been?
Well, apparently I've been everything except a chicken and a peanut.
Well, we liked you as a dragon. But there are also many other types of dragons.
Okay, that's enough.
That was pretty good.
Hey, I think, hey, everybody.
Yes.
I can't believe you still know those lines.
That was great. Hey, you're helping me live my dreams right here on WDW today. So I thank you guys. Now, to wrap it up, I did want to say, Mark, how can people either reach out to you, get in touch with you, whether they need your voiceover work, maybe they want to follow you on social media? Is there any way, is there anything you want to plug, essentially, Mark?
Of course.
I'm on Twitter at Mark Mosley.
All right.
And it's Mosley.
All right. We'll make sure to put that in our notes as well.
I'm going to follow you.
Yeah. And then Tom. Yeah. You see, that's the thing, Tom. You being the supervising animator of Mushu, I think you have.
I think I need to follow him, don't I?
You need some. Yeah. Well, maybe you need to get him in for some work here. You know?
No, I might get him some work. There you go.
Let's make it happen.
And then Tom, same thing. How can people follow you? You have your podcast. You mentioned Patrick Warburton was just on the podcast. Great episode.
Yeah, my twin brother and I, Tony, who co-directed Mulan, we have an podcast, the Bancroft Brothers Animation Podcast. And so that comes out every 2 weeks, a new one. We did just have Patrick Warburton on.
Patrick Warburton.
There you go.
It was actually just Mark. It was Mark, and just, you didn't tell anybody. That's
well, now, Mark, I don't know if you know this, but my brother also was supervising animator of Kronk. So we have two connections to you, don't we?
So you can hire him. Awesome. You can hire him for two voices.
Yeah, there's another voice right there.
You know, I met Patrick Warburton, and I said to him, it was a few years ago, and I said, I do an impression of you, and I'm waiting for you to get so big that you can't handle all the work. And sure enough, last year I got to do some of his stuff that he was too busy to get to. So
that was
a fun job.
That's good for both of you. That means he got to that level.
Yeah.
And now you're exactly. Getting the spillover. Great. Yeah. Oh, and then also they could go to we have a Bancroft Brothers fan page on Facebook. So just put in Bancroft Bros. And then I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. And it's Tom Bancroft 1.
All right. We will search. We'll put that all in our notes so people can go to WDW today and they can follow you and find out all these for Mark and for Tom. And Tom, to wrap this up, I just want to get you. You recently went down to Walt Disney World before they closed it down. And we're able to experience the attraction now with kids. What was that like for them to see you up on the screen, up in the lights?
Well, I mean, it sounds like Mark has seen the show more than I have, but I hadn't seen it for a few years. And we went back to Walt Disney World for a family trip. And this was a couple years ago. And because I hadn't seen it in a while, I was like, I had to drag them there. My kids are not exactly like... Well, they're proud of me, but they're not like they don't like to show it.
You're still their dad, so it's right. still a little lame.
I mean, they're teenagers. Yeah, exactly. Let's put it that way, okay? So I had to drag them there, and I said, no, you guys haven't seen this before. I don't think they'd seen it, but maybe once back when they were little. And so I said, you guys are going to come. We're going to watch this. I hadn't seen it in years. Took my wife. She's probably seen it one other time, too. And so I thought, you know, let's just do this. And we sat through it. And it was extremely surreal for me because here I was looking at a younger version of me because I hadn't seen him in a while,
right?
In the mirror or anywhere else. And so, yeah, I had hair and all that beautiful stuff that I miss so much. And I'm talking with a woman's voice because I sound horrible. My kids tease me that I sound like a girl. And they're just watching going, that was weird, you know, because they didn't know me back then. That was before my twins were, well, maybe they had just been born.
Yeah, but not enough to comprehend that version
that
of dad.
No. So, and of course, the artist.
Yeah, the cast member artist, yeah.
None of them recognized me. I didn't have anybody say.
Nobody turned around and said, hey,
and I'm like
you.
Videotaping it and everything. Yeah, yeah. And they're still not like raising an eyebrow at me because I'm this old man.
Well, that is the glory of YouTube and of these things is these attractions that sadly do go away, whether that's just due to their limited time or whether they get in place. You can relive them always online because everyone videotapes the attractions, puts them up on YouTube. So you can find it. You can even find the final version of this where people are applauding and all
that. Yeah, there's horrible grainy versions of it on YouTube.
Plenty of them. So you can search that. Search the Magic of Disney Animation. Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate you joining us. And it was awesome to have you guys on and talk about this extinct attraction now.
Great talking to you, Mark.
Anytime.
Thank you, Logan.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
All right. All right. Bye, guys.
We'll be right back on WDW Today. All right, we had to stop the show for a moment because I want to tell you guys a little bit. I told you last week, but I want to tell you this week about the new book, Capturing the Magic. And you can go to their websites, capturing-the-magic.com, or visit them on Amazon. Go to Amazon, search for it. But Capturing the Magic is a visual journey that will change the way you see the Walt Disney World parks. The creators of Capturing the Magic will take you on an artful tour through the Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Disney's Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom. Has hundreds of awesome, stunning photos of the wondrous landscapes and attractions. Like I said, I sat with my son last week. We went through it. It was great. It's almost like being there is really what it feels like. Capturing the Magic, it's a coffee table book that brings the magic of Walt Disney World Resort into the homes of all of you Disney fans everywhere. Also, for every copy of the book sold, $1 will be donated to Make-A-Wish to help grant wishes to kids around the country. So it's a great cause. Again, capturing-the-magic.com or search for them on Amazon.
It's time for listener questions with Lynn.
Well, you know, we teased that starting soon, you'll get your own full listener questions episode, and that's going to come this Monday.
Woohoo!
Coming up this Monday, listener questions with Lynn returns to form. As you'll see, I stumble through the intro. Returns to form. The feet are wet. Everything is great. We're back in business for full-length listener questions, but we want to make sure in each and every episode we do answer a few questions because we get so many from you guys. And let's start that off. Who wants to take the first question?
I got it.
Lynn, you got it. No, I'm just kidding. Will's got it.
All right. This is from Vicky. She says, my 8-year-old son has said he'd like to attempt all 4 parks in one day. I can already stop this and say, this is where you discipline your child. Just kidding. Sorry. We're seasoned Walt Disney World travelers and would love to know how you'd go about this. We're 2 adults. We have 2 kids who will be 5 and 9 when we travel. What do you think the rule should be? 1 attraction and 1 food item in each park, perhaps? We're at the Beach Club for a week, Art of Animation for a week, and Fort Wilderness for 10 days. Which do you think would be a better location to start from?
I would start from Trader Sam's. Because if you're going to do this with an 8-year-old and a
5 and 9 year old,
you're going to want to start a Trader Sam's.
Working 9 to 5.
Yeah, you got a tiki rum.
I've done it, but I've done it as a younger adult man. So I've done it as like a 20-year-old. And that was enough to like, by the end of it, we were exhausted. But it is fun. If you do it that way, if you're saying you could do 1 attraction and, you're okay with just doing 1 attraction and a food item, I mean, that's very doable.
Well, it sounds like they're there long enough. It's not like they're going to miss out on Disney.
They're living.
Yeah. All right, Lynn, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think 1 attraction and 1 food item. You might make it interesting by saying 2 attractions, but on opposite ends of the park, plus 1 food item. That might be interesting, too. As far as, and you'll have plenty of time to do that, by the way. That's not even maybe an hour, 90 minutes in each park. So make sure you end at the Magic Kingdom. It's typically the park that is open latest, and for that reason, I think Fort Wilderness might be the place to go from on that. So you would probably want to start at whatever park has morning extra magic hours and end in the Magic Kingdom. So with Fort Wilderness, the only downside to that is because of the way the internal bus system works, you may have to get out of there a little bit earlier than you would if you were leaving from Beach Club. But again, getting back from the Magic Kingdom when you're done will be as easy as it gets. So,
see, I would start at Beach Club.
That was my other choice, yeah.
Yeah, because you can literally walk in and kind of sneak into Epcot, do a couple of things, you know.
It's a long walk for a 5 and 9 year old.
Yeah, here is a follow-up question.
The strollers, I guess, are... Yeah.
Do any of you guys have a stretching routine to work the muscles out after this? Because it does seem like it's going to be a lot of walking.
Wear very good shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duct tape your feet.
Having moisture wicking socks
yeah,
is important. You know, you don't want to wear cotton socks because that's just blisters. Yeah, and you want to stay hydrated. Those are the big things. But again, a couple of attractions and a food item in each park, very doable. The kids will always remember it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You probably spend more time in transportation between the parks than you will on rides, but still, it's the point is to get it done.
Yeah, highly recommend.
I think it's a great idea.
And family bonding.
Yeah, highly.
It's a memory for sure.
Highly recommend that. Hey, just convince them to do attractions like, hey, we're going to the Magic Kingdom. Let's do the People Mover. It's like then it'll be like 25 minutes in each park. That would be my goal. My new goal? Can you do 4 parks in 2 hours? all right.
Can you do all the lazy attractions in the park?
We're working on that, Lynn, for you. We'll give you the data for the Lazy Man's Guide to Walt Disney World, which is
just all the secondary rides.
Yes. Can you do can you do pretty much a whole day without waiting more than an hour in line total? And I think I think it's very doable. And look, I love those. You got your Hall of Presence. I don't want to give it away. You got so much.
Yeah, that's
you got
coming
so
up.
Much.
That's
I can't wait. That one I can't wait to do actually myself.
Like, we're going to actually have to do that.
Oh, I'm doing that. All right. Yeah.
So Lauren asks, if you could spend one night in a deluxe resort, visit one park, and eat one signature restaurant, what would you choose? So one deluxe resort, one park, and eat in one signature restaurant.
All right. Let it sink in. Let me know when you guys are ready. Who's ready? Terry, you ready?
I'll go.
I'm ready. I mean,
deluxe resort, I would probably have to say the Poly, just because I like that resort. I would say... I mean, obviously, if you're only going to visit one park, you're going to go to the Magic Kingdom because it is the park. And eat in one signature restaurant, I would have to say California Grill.
All right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't agree with any of these. Well, Poly, I have to lean
one signature. So you're talking.
What'd you say, California Grill?
California Grill.
That's fine.
I mean, unless you're talking meal plan, and then say you want to do one like something that costs 2 points, and then I would say Hoop Dee Doo Musical Review.
Yeah, I don't know if that is specifically deluxe dining. Is that what it says?
I've got, I'll give mine real quick.
Oh, signature restaurant.
Because I want to be ridiculed earlier rather than later.
Okay.
So I really like Bay Lake Tower. So my deluxe.
Respectable.
Get that one bedroom.
And I would say as far as the signature restaurant, I'm going to agree with Terry and say we're going to go with California Grill. I love it. Everyone knows that my favorite park is Epcot.
Yep.
But I feel like if this is a special trip, you're doing a deluxe resort, you're doing the signature restaurant, I think you should just go with the old standby and go Magic Kingdom.
All right, Lynn, what do you think?
I don't understand the love for California Grill. It's like when people talk about Doctor Who and I've never seen it. I don't get it.
Do you eat sushi, Lynn?
I do. I love sushi. I think California Grill is overpriced and overhyped. I totally don't think it's worth the expense.
All right. Well, that's your.
Well, you've never had a monkey experience.
That is my
there.
Opinion. I mean, I'm no expert. So,
actually, I kind of think you are the expert.
You are the one who's actually playing the whole business.
I get it. It's highly rated. Unofficial guide readers love it. Our food person loves it. It's me. I understand. It's me. It's fine. I'm okay with it.
It's not you.
Well, give us some other options.
It's fine.
Because right now, 2 out of 3 are the same on Wills. It's just a hotel chain. So hit us with something new.
No, 2 different. He said Polynesian.
What'd you say? You said Bay Lake Tower.
Yeah, that's the only difference is Bay Lake.
Oh,
Tower.
That's right. You did say Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, you said
I'm
Magic
sorry.
Kingdom.
I fooled
this matter,
myself.
Because we're right.
Yeah,
so
that's very true.
The certainty of your convictions. You know, I'm gonna go with a theme here. I'm going to say my deluxe resort is Animal Kingdom Lodge. I've always wanted to stay at the Vice Presidential Suite.
Ooh.
I have not yet done it. My one park is the Animal Kingdom because I've spent a lot of time in the Magic Kingdom recently. And the other two parks need some work. And then one signature restaurant, I'm going to go with Gico because I love the appetizers and I love the wine list.
And you don't want to have to move very much. I mean, you're staying with it.
I know,
like,
right? Done and done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I was going to do Gico as well, but I'll switch it up now. Let's do so for where I'm going to stay, I will stay at, I haven't done it clearly because why would I have at the Poly, but at those over the water. Businesses, the
bungalow. You're gonna get
bungalow.
Your bungalow.
I want to get the bungalow. Gonna get the bungalow, Epcot, and Los Alamos.
Yeah,
gotta make it easy. I know Los Alamos. People will go. It wasn't as good as it was. Well, I didn't experience it before. It was as good as it was, and I actually have had great experiences.
Oh, it's still fantastic.
So, I love Epcot, and I think that's great. Sorry, Lynn, what were you saying?
Still highly rated.
Yeah, highly rated.
Highly rated.
We need to do a highly rated podcast, and that'd be good. or a lowly rated podcast.
The I think we already are doing a lowly rated podcast.
That's true.
So then, what is the worst, lowest rated dining on property?
On property, it is
like a sit down restaurant.
Bongos, easily.
Bongos.
In fact, if you look at the restaurants that cluster towards the bottom of the unofficial guide surveys, more of them are in Disney Springs than any other location, and they're all the old ones. The Paradiso 37s, the Bongos, the Portobellos, Wolfgang Puck's.
See, I actually enjoy lunch at Bongos, so do you think it's the service, maybe? Because I have never had great service there.
It's slow, it's loud.
Real loud.
It's old.
Yeah, it's old. I just don't give it a lot of like you saw with Fulton's. I mean, Fulton's is essentially going through a complete rewrite of the menu and complete reconcept. Reconcepting, is that the word? Is that a word?
Reimagining?
Sure. You know, if those other restaurants, I don't think those restaurants survive 2016 in their current state. There's no way. Yeah. The land is too valuable that they're on.
Yeah, I didn't love Bongos 10 years ago.
Am I the only one that didn't know that it was owned by Gloria Estefan?
Bongos is?
Yeah,
you're literally the only one.
Well, Logan looked shocked.
I don't think I did. I've ate there.
You didn't know, really?
Yeah.
The last time I ate there was probably 10 years ago. It was a bad experience. It was loud. It was crazy. I hated it. So I have not.
We always go at lunch.
See, I've only
gone
at dinner.
And we get the Cuban sandwich.
I was the guy that caused a fight that made everyone... made the evacuation happen.
I love this. Who's asking this next question? Because I love this next question.
All right. Let's all ask this next question. Sure. Brian Hourihan, who must be related to Lauren.
Who just asked the...
Did he just log into two different Facebook accounts to ask the questions? And so this is from Brian. He said, Eisner, Iger, or Walker, who has been the most influential Disney CEO since Roy O. and Walt? So... You love this answer, Terry, so why don't you start it?
Well, I think if you're going to answer this question from a parks perspective, Eisner has obviously was the man when it came to the parks.
Yeah.
Iger has been great as a CEO of Disney Incorporated.
Yep.
And they've, you know, obviously he's behind Pixar becoming part of the company and Marvel becoming part of the company and Star Wars, which are all fantastic. But I don't... Have we actually had a brand new e-ticket under his tutelage in Orlando? I know the Cars Land is new, but I don't think actually since Iger has been CEO, there has been a new e-ticket attraction in Orlando.
Well, lots on the way, but I feel like...
Seven Dwarfs Mine Train? No?
Yeah, Mine Train, that's what I was going
to
say.
Not an e-ticket.
Really?
Yeah, I would say it's probably...
Yes, for not for... Yeah.
Not an e-ticket.
All right, yeah, he became the... When did he become the chairman or whatever, the CEO?
I feel like he's been the magic show, you know, when you watch and you're following the three cups and you're trying to figure out where the ball is moving. He's done that at the theme parks.
He's been in it for 16 years now. So no, 2005. Sorry. He was the president and CEO. He became the CEO or what is... I'm sorry. I'll
chairman or
chairman, whatever it is, in 2005. So that's interesting. I don't know.
No e-tickets.
No, there's gotta be something. You're missing. Yeah. Toy Story Mania. I would put that as an e-ticket. What?
Okay. All right. Hey, let's get... We'll give him that. Okay. Toy Story Mania. Let's judge him on that.
That's
okay.
That's fine. I mean, I love the ride. But
no, but it's just... It's not Space Mountain. It's not...
Star Tours 2.0?
Somebody said this, and I don't remember who. Somebody said it, but I loved it. It's Iger's the guy that... Eisner's the guy that put money in the parks. Iger's the guy that took money out of the parks.
Mm. Well, except here's what I'll say. And this is where, because this is my thoughts on this, is that yes, you may be right temporarily, except for we've had in Disneyland, crazy expansion. You've had a Disney World, now we're getting Star Wars Land, Avatar Land. And yes, they may not be Toy Story Land. They may not be the fan favorites for some of those things like Avatar Land, but you're getting the largest expansion in parks history under Bob Iger. So
here's the thing. The parks made $1 billion in profit last year. There's still a cash cow. There's still more money coming out of them than money being put in.
Well, that's kind of a business.
as far as the business,
you don't spend everything you make.
Yeah, I understand. But it happens. It's the parks are supporting the other parts of the business which aren't profitable.
Yeah,
like ESPN.
Yeah, it's time to drop that.
I personally would say, as of this moment, right now,
Eisner.
Yeah.
For the reasons that have been stated, even when you think about like the second golden age of animation being under his tenure. Right.
Yeah, he was a visionary for
things
sure.
like that were wonderful. And, you know, we wouldn't necessarily have as much interest in the parks. I can't say that definitively, but because of his tenure, Disney was so beloved as a part of our childhood that it has been able to continue in the fashion that's making it easy for Iger to pull the money out. But I will also defer to what Logan said about he's supervising the biggest expansion of the parks in a long time. So it very well could be that if he hits a grand slam that, you know, I'm changing my tune. But I can't say that as of right now.
I'm speaking mainly because this is a Disney World podcast, and we are asking about who has been. He's, I mean, Cars Land, no argument here. Mind-blowingly fantastic. The Cars ride is definitely an e-ticket ride. The Raiders Strings Racers, but Orlando definitely needs some loving.
And it's getting it. It's getting it. It's getting the largest expansion in parks history. So that's just my opinion on that.
It's coming.
It's coming.
We'll see how it is. We'll judge it when it's there.
We'll see how Star Wars Land is. I'm sure it's going to not meet expectations.
Yeah, let's be honest. That movie, horrible. Yeah, no one liked that movie. It didn't make a red cent.
Well, Lynn, do you have any final thoughts on that?
I think it's Eisner. If you look at the not only the parks, but look at the hotel expansion, the architecture that he put into Walt Disney World.
It's not even close. I think from that point, everyone's right. Eisner definitely was the king of revitalizing the whole company.
And if you follow Michael Eisner on Twitter, it feels like he's in Orlando more than Bob Iger is.
It does feel like he's there. It's great.
Every time he posts, he's definitely like,
I think that's going to do it. That's a lot of questions and comments.
Thanks, Lynn, and obviously Will joined us for that segment, but Kyle's still here in the studio with us, so that just means it's time to wrap up. And the way we wrap up every week is we're talking about your company, Off to Neverland Travel. So maybe we could talk a little bit more about that. Why don't we do that? Okay, Off to Neverland, the website, go to neverland.com. We'll make this one short and sweet. Why should people use Off to Neverland?
We love you guys, and we love Disney, and we want you to experience Disney as we do in magical, amazing ways. We don't want you to go and just be there. We want you to go and experience all that Disney has to offer, and we help you plan, prepare, nail those expectations, and have an amazing time, create some lifelong memories.
Yep. And as Will always says,
all you got to do is pack.
That's right. All you got to do is pack. Go to neverland.com. So next week is episode 1500. Make sure you listen, especially if you want to book a trip through Off to Neverland. You're going to like what we have to say. So make sure, listen to episode 1500. We hope you like it. Thanks to Off Kilter, the greatest band in podcasting, offkilter.net. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
I'm Terry Weaver.
And I'm Kyle Froman.
We'll talk to you on the next show. Find the meaning, looking up and out of